This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Join the Pacifica Radio Network on Tuesday, November 27th, when we open the treasure chest of sounds that changed the world from the Pacifica Radio Archives. Beginning at 7 a.m. Eastern Time on all five Pacifica stations, we'll be treated to the voices of John Coltrane, Rosa Parks, Allen Ginsberg, and many others. We'll all get an opportunity to contribute to the effort to preserve these precious recordings. Don't miss our day-long celebration of the Pacifica Radio Archives, Sounds That Changed the World. Tuesday, November 27th, beginning at 7 a.m. Eastern Time.
This is KPFT Houston.
The Bush administration and its congressional allies are systematically trying to convince the American people that Iran is a clear and present threat to the United States. But as in the lead-up to the Iraq War, the administration has been using unreliable sources, exaggerated threat assessments, selective use of information, and questionable accusations about Iran's nuclear program. A United States strike on Iran would directly lead to the deaths of tens, if not hundreds, of thousands of Iranian men, women, and children. The Pacifica National Board calls for strong leadership in Congress to oppose war or any military action against Iran. Pacifica further calls on Congress to limit the authority of the President to initiate war against any country in the world without congressional approval. For the full text of the Pacifica Statement, visit pacifica.org.
This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And Jennifer Inay.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
And this evening we're going to be talking about a number of different things, including we're going to get an update about Pride Houston. And then we're going to be talking about the election coming up. Believe it or not, there's another election coming up here in Houston.
There's always an election going on in Houston.
Yes, Wanda Adams is going to be with us, and Nick Hellyer, who is running the Montrose part of the campaign. And then we're going to be talking about World AIDS Day, which is coming up a week from Friday.
It's the first, right? Is that what
it is? Well, it is the first, but there will be a bit, because the first is on a Saturday, there will be a number of events that will be happening on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And then
and also next Monday on Queer Voices,
we're going to talk about a little
more queer music heritage special on AIDS.
And we'll also be talking about it next week, too, because there's so many things going on. And then we'll have Tim Brookover from Outsmart, who's going to be talking about a number of different things. So all that's coming up on this edition of Queer Voices. But I'd like to talk a little bit to Jennifer about the Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Yes, Saturday was the 17th. We had it at the Holocaust Museum. The Transgender Day of Remembrance is a day of memorial for those members of the transgender community who were murdered in the prior 12 months. It's held in November because that was when, in 1939, the Day of the Long Knives, they called it, The Institute, at that time, the quintessential place that was studying transgender, not the word at that time, but for our purposes it is, and in Berlin, of all places, and the Nazis came and broke in, got the files, and then collected those people for whatever purposes they want. They were arrested and hauled away. So it's held in November. It's a way of remembering those people due to just who they are who have been murdered over the last 12 months. There are a number of people. Sue Lovell was there and spoke. She presented a proclamation from the mayor naming November 17th of this year as the Transgender Day of Remembrance, which was a very nice gesture on the part of the mayor's office. And then we had several people locally who had been victims of hate crime or assaults because of who they are, being transgender. And then we read off the names of those who had been murdered in here in Houston and around the state.
Is this a national observance?
It's a national observance. It's not all held on the same day, mm-hmm. but they try to hold it as close to the 20th as possible. It was just that we had it at the Holocaust Museum. They have just been wonderful people as far as giving it
place.
as a venue to have it for the last 3 years. And because of that, we had to hold it on Saturday. Normally, we try to hold it on the 20th itself. But it was well attended. We were very pleased with the number of people who came. It was about the same number as came last year, which was very gratifying. And to say the least, everyone was moved by the intensity of what happened. Reading off some of the names, and in doing so, you read off what happened. If there's a report of that, a murderer transgender is probably the definition of a hate crime, in the sense that it's always heinous. It's never transgender stabbed, once and killed. It's like they were stabbed 30 times and set on fire and the body was mutilated, and it's just this hideousness of the action that makes it truly a hate crime. And it's not very easy to identify some of them because there's no statistics on it. They don't say this person was transgender. We have to search some notables we find, but a lot of the others, you have to do the research, newspapers, where it reads something like, man in dress found. Or
it's like gay hate crime, where they're always underreported.
Oh, yeah. It's basically the way, gay and lesbian hate crimes occur, and it never gets reported. And it's just something that the public, through its institutions, really don't want to know. They don't want to know about it. And that's why it was held. It was started by a woman in 9 years ago by a woman in California who was wanted to have a memorial for her daughter, a transgender daughter who was murdered. And in doing so, it started the movement that year and is continued on. Something new, and it's only been around 9 years, basically because it's been difficult for the community to actually have a voice where people could hear. It started in Houston 9 years ago with the steps of City Hall, people holding candles, about 5 or 10 people holding candles, reading the names, just as we did on Saturday, reading the names and of who had been murdered. And so it's continued on since then.
Well, the FBI today just released a new study about hate crimes, and they're up. I don't know if they actually broke it down for GLBT, but it definitely is up.
And but can they gauge that? Is it up because more are being reported?
Well,
or are there more happening?
Exactly. That's a very good question.
It would be my guess that it's up because they're starting to take the statistics. They're more people are identifying it as hate crime. A lot of the hate crime, whether it is a hate crime or not a hate crime, usually comes from the DA's office. If they don't deem it as such,
right,
then it's not a hate crime.
And especially in the smaller municipalities or the rural areas.
Oh, yeah. Well, small towns don't have gay people or GLBT people at all, so they're not going to put that in the paper, and then they're going to consider it hate crime. Just someone was murdered. And but again, when you have to do the research to find the people, the individuals themselves, you have to dig into the reports to actually find out whether they were or not. And then it's only sketchy. A lot of them, there were two that came up on Saturday that were unknown. They were just unknown. We don't know who they were. They were just transgender people who were murdered, left on the side of the road. And it is... it's a sad state of affairs that people are left unnamed, lost. They may have been lost in life as family had abandoned them, and then they end up lost as just a statistic and a body on the side of the road. The government, the police, the DAs, a hate crime is a hate crime. When someone is attacked, whether they're murdered or not, they need to do something about it. And a special, I'll take that argument about, no, I don't have the hate crime bill. The fact is that there are some crimes that are out of such hatred that they need to have special circumstances. It's like murder anyway. You can get life imprisonment or the needle, and it in California they call it special circumstances. Hate crime is special circumstances. Someone murdered or someone brutalized like that.
Well, I think we
on that upbeat note,
I think we need to take a little break here. And you have some music lined up, J.D.?
I've got a song by Mary Gaucher I picked. It's called Thanksgiving, and no, don't expect a peppy song from Mary Gaucher, but it's a beautiful song, again, called Thanksgiving.
We stood in a long line waiting for the door to be unlocked. Out in the cold wind, round the razor wire fenced in cell block, young mamas with babies, sisters, and other kinds of kin. At Tallulah State Prison on Thanksgiving Day, we're waiting to get in. You gotta get here early. It don't matter how many miles you drove. They make you wait 4 hours. Always move slow. They run names, check numbers, gravel-faced guards that don't smile. Grammy and me in line, silently waiting, single file. They're done.
their touch off her dress stands tall and heads in. It's Thanksgiving at the prison, surrounded by family. Road weary pilgrims who show up faithfully. Even though it ain't easy, even though it ain't free, sometimes love ain't easy. Love ain't
is Queer Voices.
With us this evening is Brad Odom. He is the newly elected president of Pride Houston. And tell us about what's going on this year.
All right. Thanks, first of all, for having me here tonight. One of the things that I realized recently in speaking in front of a group is that people don't know that the vote was final and nothing, or actually the best part, was passed, that we're keeping the parade right on Westheimer where it's always been. We listened to the community spoke, and it's going to be the same time, same place, and I'm personally happy about that. So it'll be June 28th, start of up about 8:45, but get down to Westheimer Montrose about 9:15, and we'll also. There's been a lot of questions around a festival component. There will be a festival component. Part of our mission statement is to educate and allowing community organizations to interact with the public is key and important to us. And we also already have a lot of the infrastructure for a festival. So allowing community organizations, allowing businesses that market to our community a forum and a way to interact with the people is important. To do that this year, we've also decided to make it free. So not even having the expense of and the man having to have the extra manpower of manning a gate, the cost of the gate last year I think cost almost as much as we got in ticket sales. So I think that opening it up to the general public, allowing people in, and getting more people face to face, handshaking.
Well, Montrose doesn't really lend itself very much to having the big festival. I mean that's just part of it. You don't have the land area; you have to do it on the streets.
Right.
So it cost a bunch of money to be able to fence it. Will you still have to put fencing around, or
No. That's one of the things is it's going to be a much more allow us to have a much more open format. So there won't be the fencing that there'll be a better flow through the festival. If you attended before, there's sort of one entrance, one exit. You had to go and find it. Sometimes it moved. Those challenges will be behind us as well.
Well, you know, last year there was all the controversy about whether the parade should be moved or not, and now that that's settled, and like you said, not everybody knows about it because we don't have a weekly newspaper like we used to, and people don't always, you know, they don't always know until it's, they sometimes feel threatened, I guess, about losing what they thought was the best thing, that what they liked. But so now I'm putting the organization back together. Have you chosen a theme yet this year?
We have. We've not chosen to announce it just yet, but
okay.
We are celebrating our 30th anniversary. So as a community, this is our 30th celebration of who we are and what we're doing, and we're We're centering it around that and a little bit in regards to what was happening 30 years ago. So that could give you a little hint.
Well, it's pretty interesting because there's a number of organizations. The Bio-City Performing Arts and the Montrose Counseling Center will also be celebrating their 30th year in 2008. Of course, they have a presidential election. Yeah, it's going to be... there's a lot going on, and hopefully it's all going to be good. Now that the organization doesn't have a staff, I guess you're going to be relying much more on volunteers.
Yeah, we need volunteers, absolutely. And you can go up on our website and sign up or just show up every Saturday morning around 10 o'clock to actually 10:30. We have people there willing to sign people in and start doing different tasks. But anytime, just call up or email us. We have specific needs in the office and helping answer phones and also keeping track of that, managing that database, but also managing, we're specifically looking for an accounting person, some additional accounting staff. So some of those things are definite needs. Also marketing, anybody who likes to play with websites, anybody who enjoys marketing, we have a lot of creative people in our community. We're looking for that type of staff as well. So we welcome everyone.
And when are the meetings?
We have set our both our production team meeting and our board meeting on the second Wednesday of every month. The production team is at 7 o'clock and the board meets at 6. So starting about 5:30, there's a whole bunch of people around the Pride office ready to invite you in. Or bring you in, or drag you in, or push you in. Or
now, you recently just had your retreat, and how did that go?
We did. It went quite well. We didn't do it the exact format, but the focus of what we want to come out of the retreat, which hasn't always come out. In fact, the last couple of years that I've gone on the retreats, we haven't come out with a budget. This year we have. So we have our budget identified. We've moved some finances around, especially with the change of the festival. We're going to try to put a little more production into and entertainment into the beginning of the parade. So look for some more fun things there. Another unique thing that came out of it is changing up the Friends of Pride program. Friends of Pride is still going to have all the benefits that we have, but we have an extra special piece. A lot of people feel very strongly about the centerpiece. It's been the disco ball, it's been a chandelier, it's been a lot of different things. We're going to have a sponsor for that, but we also are asking everybody to donate to it. And it's your light of the community, and it's the centerpiece of the community. And 100% of those donations will go back to a charity that's yet to be identified. So it's a new thing, a little bit refreshing. We're doing something, and it hasn't been decided what that charity and all the details are yet to come. Hopefully by the end of the year we'll have all that fleshed out. But really a goal personally to have some sort of charity offering back into the community.
Great. So you said you're still looking for people to be volunteers. Are you also looking for board members? Or
we are looking for board members. We're actually we have a board of five. We have about three or four other options openings for the board. We're looking for people who are active in the community, connected, have an interest in Pride, and have time to dedicate. So we're definitely, and we have a few candidates that we're bringing in right now that we're looking at, but we're always open, and anybody who wants to apply, feel free to apply.
So the component of the parade and the festival, besides that, what other components are going to be in the celebration? Events, or
we do have a whole host of events that lead up to the parade. We do have a kickoff party. The kickoff party, as the date is yet to be set. How soon? Tentatively, it's going to be the night before the parade to make it more of a weekend of events. It normally has been at the beginning of June, so that is yet to be announced. We also, with Friends of Pride, we always have our annual wine tasting event where about 9 to 10 different wineries come in, donate wine, and makes a nice evening of socialization. And then all of the community organizations that have their events. And June is a busy month for everyone, so we look forward to it.
Absolutely. And so you talked about looking for volunteers. Specifically, what interest? You talked about, some marketing and...
Marketing, our website, the office. There's some general office duties. We're reaching out in a couple of different ways about accounting. That's always we burn through treasurers, not through anything other than there's just a lot of work. The annual budget it's been reduced this year, but it's in the upwards of $250,000-$300,000, and those come in very small independent donations, so all of that has to be accounted for, and it goes out sometimes $20 or $50 at a time in different events. So it's a big task for one person. So it's we're trying to build a team to do that, much like a business that the size of Pride would need.
Right. So you said, what's the best way for somebody to get involved?
Going out to our website, pridehouston.org,
okay.
And there is a couple of different. There's a volunteer application online that you can submit online and get back to us.
Great.
And then we'll get in contact with
you. And I have a question.
Okay.
What is the date of the parade this year?
It is June 28th, so it is the last Saturday in June.
Which, I've seen some other cities moved it up a little bit because it was getting closer to the 4th of July, but Houston's going to keep it at the last Saturday.
Yes, that's the date that I have it as. So,
okay. So you're looking for specific volunteers to help out in some of the areas, and why don't you talk a little bit about? It's a lot of hard work, but people also have a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. I mean, if it wasn't, I guess having been there for 3 years and every year, I mean, truly, truly my drive is that I remember my first Pride and being able to deliver a Pride that is just perfect for whoever it might be their first Pride is something that's special to me. And getting out there on the day and actually knowing that you had a part in helping all these organizations have a venue to shine and to show off. I mean, go down and celebrate really celebrate our diversity. Over 100 different organizations and entries will parade down Westheimer, and through that you get to see all these different facets of our community. And for a person who's never been there, that ability to go, I'm like them, and connect and make a connection, is just, you can't do that anywhere else. And that's something that's, really special.
Great. Okay. So do you have any events coming up or any fundraisers coming up in the next couple months?
We do. Annually, Carol Wyatt has had a Christmas party, and she is making us the beneficiary of that again. That is the first weekend in December, and it is
I believe
Friday
it's the 7th of,
I believe
of,
it's the 7th of December.
December.
Yes.
And the information should be on the website?
Yes.
Okay.
And then that's really it through the end of the year. Friends of Pride, always looking for donors and sponsorships. And you can go to fophouston.org or through the Friends of Pride website.
Okay.
Do you have any plans as far as the festival is concerned? I know it's going to be open to the public, but what all the venues will you have? Because some people may not have gone to the festival in the past.
Yeah, the components that we'll definitely have are the just community organizations. One of the things that's really, really key is that ability for a community organization to, and a lot of that's been underwritten graciously by donations from Bunnies on the Bayou in the past and other community organizations, to set aside an area for our nonprofit organizations to set up booths and actually just talk to a little bit about what they do.
Such as the History Tent?
And well, the History Tent is a separate component, and the History Tent is a venue for people to come in and see a little bit about our history. There's also usually a a wellness tent, and some of the things are sponsorship driven, so their ability to exist is going to be dependent on their, you know, again, getting obtaining the same sponsorships that we had in the past. But you know, I'm sure that Walgreens and Legacy, they've been amazing sponsors in the past, that they've done it, a tent providing testing services, and that's you'll see a big difference in the ability to do that, provide it to the people who paid $10 versus the ability to provide that to everybody who wants it. Really opening that up to the community. And then different businesses. There's businesses that are really targeting and looking to target to services to the community. They have their booths, and then some food and other variety things that go along with the festival.
Okay, so pridehouston.org is the website. Your meetings are the second Wednesday of every month. Where?
At 1415 California in the Pride office. So just enter in the side door, and it's right, just a block north of Westheimer.
And you have volunteer sessions on every Saturday starting
about
10:30.
Correct.
If anybody's interested in volunteering, or you can sign up on the website.
Correct.
And it's scheduled for June 28th, Saturday.
Yes.
Nighttime parade as usual in the heart of Montrose is where it usually is, where it always is, actually. And then there will be a festival of some component, some sort, as a free festival.
Yes. Yes, and the only thing that isn't completely defined is our entertainment and how much entertainment we'll have there versus really shifting the entertainment out onto the street pre-parade. We do like to make a venue for local talents, local artists, and so we may have some sort of community stage.
Great. Brad Odom is president of Pride Houston. If you want some more information, you can go to pridehouston.org. You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Sherry Lunn.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 17th, 2007. Queer eyes were once again focused on Iran this week, 2 months after President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad infamously told the world that there were no homosexuals in his country. A story in this week's Times of London reported that Mohsen Yahyavi, a member of Iran's parliament, admitted during a meeting in May with British MPs that his country had, in fact, executed gay men. Some international LGBT rights groups believe that more than 4,000 lesbians and gay men have been put to death in Iran since the Ayatollahs seized power in 1979. Of the few that have been documented, the internet-posted public hanging of two teenage boys in 2005 is the most notorious. When British MPs asked him about those executions, Yahyavi explained that according to Islam, gays and lesbianism were not permitted, according to minutes of the meeting published in the Times. He said that if homosexual activity is in private, there is no problem, but those in overt activity should be executed. He initially said tortured, but changed it to executed. He argued that homosexuality is against human nature and that humans are here to reproduce.
But Iran's top judge this week reportedly halted the execution of a 21-year-old man who allegedly had sex with another male when the accused was only 13 years old. It's generally believed that when a male is accused of having sex with another male in Iran, the charge is listed as rape, as it was in the case against Makhvan Mouladzadeh. Eagle Herc, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, had written to Iranian authorities appealing for a reversal of the capital punishment decree. The group reported this week that Iran's Chief Justice Ayatollah Sayed Mahmoud Hashemi Shiruti determined that the death sentence was in violation of Islamic teachings, a possible first such ruling in that country, as well as the religious decrees of high-ranking Shiite clerics and the law of the land. Other human rights organizations, including Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the Iranian Queer Organization, had also pleaded for Mouladzadeh's life. Eagle Herc says that no one ever accused him of rape during his trial, and that all the prosecution witnesses against him told the court that their statements were untrue and that some had been coerced. Eagle Herc Executive Director Paula Edelbrick called the ruling a stunning victory for human rights and a reminder of the power of global protest. But Mouladzadeh remains in prison. The Chief Justice's ruling sends the case back to a lower court for retrial. Under Islamic law in Iran, sodomy remains a capital crime punishable by public lashings or hanging. According to Eagle Herc, homosexual acts also carry the death penalty in Mauritania, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, the United Arab Emirates, Yemen, and largely Muslim northern Nigeria.
But consensual adult gay sex will no longer be a criminal offense in Nicaragua under a new civil code to take effect in March, according to a report this week in La Prensa newspaper. Existing law, passed in 1992, says that anyone who induces, promotes, propagandizes, or practices sexual intercourse between persons of the same sex commits the crime of sodomy and shall incur 1 to 3 years imprisonment. Critics said the law not only criminalized gay and lesbian sexual activity, but was also vague enough to allow the prosecution of individuals for promoting LGBT rights or anyone providing sexual health information or services. Nicaragua's new code reflects changing social attitudes in the heavily Roman Catholic country, according to Jose Payas, president of the Nicaraguan Parliament's Commission of Justice and Legal Issues. He told La Prensa that, "We are not creating a code of the Catholic Church here. We are creating a democratic code under modern principles and principles of legality. Abortion will remain illegal, however, because there was insufficient legislative support to change that law." Opposition to abortion was the top issue for U.S. Roman Catholic bishops in a directive they issued this week, urging parishioners to follow church teachings when deciding which candidates and policies to support in next year's general elections. The church, of course, has also generally opposed LGBT civil rights legislation and the legal recognition of same-gender couples. The document emphasizes that principled debate is needed to decide which policies best promote the common good. But that does not make moral issues optional concerns or permit Catholics to dismiss or ignore church teaching, the bishop said, adding that U.S. Catholics must only use voter resources approved by the church. But the Associated Press reported this week that Norway's state Lutheran Church has lifted an outright ban on lesbi-gay partnered clergy. The decision will, however, still allow each bishop to make individual employment decisions. The church already allows celibate gays and lesbians to serve in the clergy. After an emotional week of debate at its annual meeting held this year in the town of Lillehammer, the church's 86-member governing synod voted 50-34 to make the change. Two members abstained. In a preliminary vote earlier this year, six of Norway's 11 Lutheran bishops voted to ease the ban and are probably most likely to open the pulpit to same-gender partnered clergy. With nearly 85% of Norway's 4.7 million people as members, the church has, like several other denominations around the world, been embroiled in heated debate over the issue. Conservative Lutheran bishop Ole D. Hagesæter told a national radio program that, "This is a sad day for the church. It will be a splitting factor and lead to many feeling homeless in the church." Norwegian law gives people in same-gender unions the same rights as those in heterosexual marriages, apart from church weddings and adoption.
In other news, a Jamaican gay man, Van Massam, has won asylum in the United States because he had been threatened by anti-queer mobs that are increasingly running rampant on the island. With the assistance of students and faculty advisors at Columbia University Law School's new Sexuality and Gender Law Clinic, Massam convinced the U.S. Department of Homeland Security that he would face persecution or death if forced to return to Jamaica. In announcing the decision, the clinic noted that homosexual acts are a crime in Jamaica, that rampant rumors that hostile groups are plotting the social cleansing of hundreds of gay people by year's end have forced countless GLBT people into hiding, and that, far from a tropical paradise, this Caribbean nation continues to imprison and kill its gay citizens with relative impunity. In his own case, said Massam, "When I tried to contact the police for help, they instead threatened to arrest me and told me to leave the country if I wanted to stay safe."
And Spain has granted asylum to an Algerian transsexual. BB was able to prove that she had faced persecution and social and workplace discrimination in Algeria based on her gender identity. The government applied Spain's new law on equality to its law on asylum and determined that BB's case met Geneva Convention criteria for political refuge. BB was given a 5-year residence card and assurance that she will not be sent back to Algeria.
Elsewhere, Belgian gays and lesbians continue to marry at an increasing rate. It's one of six countries where queer couples have access to full marriage. In 2006, 1,124 same-gender couples tied the knot, compared to about 100 less in 2005. Belgium legalized marriage equality in 2003, and 854 lesbi-gay couples married that year. Brussels has the highest rate of gay male marriages, while Antwerp has seen the most lesbian marriages.
But finally, LGBT people in Jerusalem are mourning the closure this week of the city's only gay bar. Shushan, which defied religious disapproval and survived an arson attack, had been in business for 4 years. The club greeted patrons from all religious and secular persuasions and often featured at the unlikely sight of drag queens mixing with Palestinians and ultra-Orthodox Jews. Gays and lesbians face condemnation from all religious sectors in the city, Christian, Muslim, and Jewish. Pride parades and related events over the years have suffered restrictions, outright bans, and violent attacks by religious fundamentalists. While the local press hinted at problems between leftist Jerusalem City Council member and Shushan owner Sa'ar Netanel and his business partner as the reason for the closing, he cited exhaustion and being interested in other things. Unless another Jerusalem night spot opens, Shushan regulars will have to travel about 60 miles to the more liberal Tel Aviv, which has several popular LGBT bars and clubs. Happily, however, the city's queer community center, Jerusalem Open House, welcomes secular and religious Israelis and Palestinians alike and remains open for business.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 17, 2007. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
Another failure, another flop. I should try another hobby, this has gotta stop. I feel like a tightrope walker without the wire. One more disaster, one more dud. It could be worse, at least this time no flood. Though it's the 14th time that I almost caught on fire. Maybe it's luck, what is luck? How could this be luck? No one's luck could be this bad. Maybe it's fate, maybe it's time. One of these days, I'll run away. I'll make it to the top. Leave them all back in the dust. One of these days, someone will say, that boy will never stop. That day's gonna be one of these days. Don't understand it, it isn't fair. Every time I try to prove myself, results just aren't there. I feel like a mountain climber without the peak. My sister laughs at me, says I'm odd. My mop and pop think I'm a punishment from God. I get looks from my neighbors that seem to say, there goes that freak. Sometimes I wish, no I don't, yes I do, I wish that somehow I'd been born dumb. But then I feel that something may change. One of these days, I'll find a way. I'll rise above the throng. They'll be amazed at who they see. One of these days, someone will say, I knew it all along. One of these days, that's what will be. God, can it happen today? Maybe there's been a mistake. Let's trade the failure for one minor miracle, one I can't possibly pray. Blah, 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 blah. One of these days, I'll find a way. I'm gonna be number one. At least it's someone person who's
gonna touch the sky. I'm gonna win, I'm gonna sin, I'm gonna never die. Gonna glow, gonna blow, gonna click, gonna stick, gonna gain, reach, conquer, gonna make them sick. Gonna triumph, prevail, sail, rise and die, the winner gleam. Gonna see my face in every house on every screen. I'll be the hero, I'll change the world, and maybe in the end I'll even get the girl. Gotta believe it, I can see through the haze. A miracle's in for a landing. Gonna get here, gonna happen one of these days.
This is JD, and that was obviously called One of These Days. And the reason those vocals perhaps didn't sound as polished as you might have expected, he's not really a singer. He's Jonathan Larson, the creator of Rent.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it's election season again.
Yes,
it's always
it is.
Election season here in Texas. First of all, we've got to do the disclaimer that KPFT is a nonprofit organization and does not endorse any candidates. But we're talking tonight to Wanda Adams, who is in a runoff for District D. And District D is in Montrose in the southeast part of Houston. It's about one-ninth of the city, the way the districts are broken up here. And Wanda has been endorsed by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. And Wanda came out number one in with how many were in the field?
It was a total of eight of us.
Eight of us. So you got about 30%, I guess, with eight candidates.
Yeah, 34% of the vote.
Wow, that's pretty good. So tell us a little bit about your background and what qualifications you bring to the table for running for city council. And you're taking over, you'll be taking over if you win, Ada Edwards, who has a long history in this community of activism.
Yes, first of all, I want to thank the GLBT caucus for endorsing me and for embracing me. And Jennifer Poole is sitting next to me, and I want to thank Jennifer for taking the time to sit and talk to me and meet with me, and meeting me back in February when I wanted to run. And, of course, you know, I know Phyllis probably is listening also, and I want to thank her for entrusting me to take on this candidacy. Wanda Adams. Why Wanda Adams for City Council? I bring over 16 years of public service experience in the city of Houston. We're working with, matter of fact, Jack, this is one thing I'm most proud of, is that I started my first job in the Montrose community at Covenant House when I first graduated from Texas Southern University. So I'm really proud to say that. And I currently work for the city of Houston. I bring 7 years experience by working under two mayoral administrations, Mayor Brown and Mayor White. Recently, on last year, had the opportunity to be promoted to the Solid Waste Management Department to promote the Go Green initiative for the city, which is recycling. I bring over 7 years experience in the city of Houston, and 6 years in public service, but working with the homelessness issues in the city, working with men and women coming in and out of the prison system, working with homeless teams, parenting, constituency needs, working with seniors, working with nonprofit organizations in the city of Houston. So I bring a diversity of needs that I think that qualifies me to run for city council.
And you decided on running in this district because you live in this district?
I live in the district. I own a home in the district. And I worked in the district for like 16 years.
Okay. And have you seen, I mean, Houston's changed a lot in the past, you know, 20 years. I've been here like 25 years, somewhere around there. And it's changed a lot from a good old boy system, and it's becoming a much more progressive city. We still got some ways to go, and working in the nonprofit, I guess you see some of those things changing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of things has occurred in District D for me, noticing it for the past 16 years, is that there are some economic development issues that need to occur. There's some of the communities that have been underserved for so many years, and not just underserved mean impoverished, but it can be underserved by businesses, it can be underserved by homes and being built in the communities. But one thing that I want to bring to the district is the needs, and to listen to the communities, to seeing what they want, how we can grow the communities together, to get their opinions, to get their insight on what we can do to work together from Montrose all the way to Fort Bend. You know, district D consists of about 144 square miles, and as
that's bigger than some cities,
Shreveport and or Atlanta, if you want to look at it. And not only that, we have about 216,000 constituents that live in District D. So I want to be a part of that growth. With the city of Houston being the fourth largest city, I want to be one of the ones that help the city move forward.
Well, that's pretty interesting. There's a wide variety in the district, from Montrose to Fort Bend. That's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. A question was asked to me tonight, is what is different among the communities? And I said, based on the three goals that I'm searching for, or the three goals that I'm striving for, is to help with policing, to help with affordability of housing, and help with economic growth in the district. And I said that when, with me being in the District D and working in the district for the last 6 years, I said that all the communities want the same. They want to be in communities where they feel safe. They want to be in communities where we can work together to make sure that our police patrol areas, where we have our homes, where our families live. We want to make sure that there's economic development, where I live, I can shop. Where I live, I can attend schools. And not only that, they want to live in communities where they see progression. So, and I want to be a part of that. And I think among all the communities, we share similarities in the communities. You have some communities like Midtown that is a part of District D that we know that's growing tremendously. We have homes that are growing in there. We have businesses that are growing. And so I want to be a part of that. And also I want to be a part of the growth that what makes Houston better and what makes Houston grow. And I think that I'm the council member that can do that.
Well, and if you win and become part of the council, you think you can work with everybody else around the council table?
Yes, and that's my advantage. For the last 7 years, we had some transition among council members that are there. You know, the last election, we had some new council members to come on board. But I've had the privilege of working with the council members, such as council member Ada Edwards, Jarvis Johnson, MJ Khan, council member Sue Lovell, Ann Clutterbuck, Tony Lawrence. I had the privilege, Ron Green, had the privilege of working with all of them. So I have lasting relationships as well.
And tell me a little bit about the campaign. I mean, being that, you know, even a district that's very large, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. how do you reach out and try to talk to as many people as possible?
First of all, I want to thank Nick Hellyer that is here. That's one piece of my campaign, to be able to communicate with the constituencies of District D. And one of the strategic plans that we have place is to be able to have a grassroots campaign. That means that we are knocking on doors, we're making phone calls, we have a phone calling campaign that we're reaching out. I know that I won't be able to touch every door, but if I could, I would. But I know that there have to be other areas of communication, like mail, like the phone callings, knocking on doors. So we're doing all those things to be able to reach the constituency of District D.
Well, and you mentioned Nick Hellyer, and he's working on the Montrose area mm-hmm. of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you're doing, Nick?
Basically, we're just looking for block walkers and phone calling right now before Thanksgiving. Everybody's really gearing up for the holiday, so there's not much you can do, but just knocking on doors and reminding people that there's going to be a runoff election on December 8th.
That's a really tough thing, is that, you know, most cities will have their sort of primary or their in like October or May or March. But here in Houston, we have, you know, and if you don't get 50%, then the runoff is in December, which is, you know, it's like off the radar for most people.
Believe it or not, I think when I had the opportunity to walk Montrose, I think last weekend with Nick, and I was knocking on doors, and they say, hey, we thought you won. And the conception of people think that I won. But we're trying to get the message out to say, I won the general election, now I need to finish. And I need your help to help me finish by going out to vote. We know that the election is on December 8th, but we want to encourage the people to early vote. Early vote is where we're trying to target our voters to vote on that particular day, which begins, I think, on November 28th and ends on December 4th.
Right. It's a short, because this is a smaller election, it's a week, I guess. It starts on Wednesday and ends on Tuesday, a week mm-hmm. From this Wednesday, a mm-hmm. week from this Wednesday. And there are less places to early vote, although there are places within the district to vote, definitely. Nick, how are you helping to get out the early vote?
Well, we have a list of people that early voted, and the drop-off is going to be significant between who voted on Election Day and who's going to vote in this runoff. So basically, we're just going back to the people that we know early voted and have early voted in the past and just tell them, you know, please, like Wanda said, the election isn't over. But most people think that Wanda won. But just getting them back out there again, saying, please go vote again. And the early vote is from the 28th until the 4th. So they have an entire week where they can vote anywhere in the city, no matter what precinct they're from. They can go and vote at any early vote location.
And some of those primary locations, at least here in Montrose, is the Multipurpose Center. And then in the district, there are some other significant places to mm-hmm. vote, such as, and I don't know them offhand, because I always vote at the Multipurpose Center.
Mm-hmm. Some of them got consolidated, I'm not sure, but I believe Palm Center.
Yes, Palm Center.
And then the Sunnyside Multi-Service Center. But we don't know what it's going to be like on December 8th, because they are going to combine several polls.
Yeah, I actually got it today, and I haven't got a chance to look at it all, but a lot of polls are still open, which I was surprised.
They can still go to Harris Votes and find their locations, can they not?
I don't know if that's up there yet. I think it might still be up there for the last election. This is a little bit of a confusing election because even though the county runs it, it's really a city election.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just it always keeps you sort of guessing on that. So if somebody is interested in helping out in volunteering, what is the best way somebody can get in touch with the campaign?
The best way in the Montrose area would be to call the caucus office and leave a message with somebody there, and they'll get me. Just say I'd like to leave a message for Nick saying I would like to volunteer for the Wanda Adams campaign. That number is 713-521-1000, or they could email me at nhellyar, which is nhellyar at thecaucus.org. And just shoot me a letter and say, I'd love to help for Wanda. We have so much that people can do, from block walking to phone calls, driving, putting out yard signs. So if you don't like knocking on doors, we still have plenty of stuff for you to do to help Wanda out.
And Wanda, where's the campaign headquarters?
The headquarters is located at 8202 Cullen, which is off the 610 loop, outside the loop. And if they want to learn more about Wanda Adams, I have a website, and it's www.WandaAdams4Houston, and that's forhouston.com.
Okay, great. Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
And also, if you can't remember that email address, you can also go to info@thecaucus.org. Mm-hmm. The phone number for the caucus is 713-521-1000. And you're listening to Queer Voices here on KPFT Houston.
Truths that she learned are in time. Bridget, he cried. In Bridget, he burned. Oh, the way that she died. It's time now to sing out, although it's not the end. To celebrate, remember a year in the life of a friend. Remember the love. Remember the love. Remember the love.
This is J.D. again, and again, what a treat to hear Jonathan Larson, the playwright, creator of Rent.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, next week, we've got a lot of things going on. I mean, besides,
yes.
I mean, besides the holiday season, there's a lot of things going on in this community.
Yes, there is.
And it's hard to really keep up with them all. And even though we have a magazine that tries to keep up with it all, it's still hard. And we have a radio show also.
They can come here and listen to the radio show. They can always do that.
That's, well, that's if we're informed. Sometimes we're not totally informed.
Well,
but World AIDS Day is coming up. And Brian's with us. And Brian, I'm not going to try your last name.
It's Lavinka. The H is silent, and I call that the family curse.
Okay. Okay. Something was done this year, at least from my understanding, was that there was really a concerted effort to get all the organizations that were going to do something around World AIDS Day here in Houston to actually sit down and talk and work together. Not that they weren't working together before, but like a really concerted effort.
We actually formed a community-wide committee of different organizations for that purpose to kind of make it more visible, highlight World AIDS Day. It's been around for this is the 19th year, but in Houston you didn't really hear much about it. So we formed a committee to kind of highlight, you know, the different events going on around the city.
Great. And it's also a little bit different this year because the first is on a Saturday.
Yes.
So some events will be happening on Friday. Well, actually, some events will probably be happening on other days, but the main events will be happening on both Friday and Saturday.
That's actually a very good segue because we created a website that contains all the events for the whole weekend. That's worldaidsdayhouston.org, and we'll repeat that a couple times. But all of the events that we know of are on the website, so it's a complete listing, times, dates, and it goes on. There's stuff that's going on right now, but it's focused mostly on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of World AIDS Day.
And what are some of the highlights that will be going on this year?
Well, the kind of the spotlight event that I call it is the Illumination Project that's put on by Hope Stone at Hobby Center. That's actually a World AIDS Day night, a Saturday night at Hobby Center, 8 o'clock. It's kind of a dance in memory of, in kind of highlighting World AIDS Day. But there's events all over at the Montrose Counseling Center, at the GLBT Community Center. All over the Legacy has something, you know, there's events everywhere. So check out the website.
Okay. Working with all these organizations, was everybody sort of really open and saying, you know, is there a way that we can sort of schedule these things so we try not to conflict with everybody else?
Well, I think all of the events are going on and we're just trying to get them all out there. There's some events that overlap. So I would advise the listeners to go and kind of pick some events and attend those. And, you know, whatever you can make, that would be great. You know, just kind of remember the day. World AIDS Day.
Okay. And, I mean, so there, you know, the Montrose Counseling Center is going to do a vigil.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you give us some highlights of some of the...
The AIDS Foundation Houston is doing their annual World AIDS Day luncheon on Friday at 11:30. And they're going to have Carson Cressley from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. That's their annual big luncheon that they have for World AIDS Day. There's also Candlelight Observance with the Montrose Counseling Center. You said that one. There's a thing at Resurrection Community Church. Like I said, Illumination Project. There's actually going to be something at the BRB on Sunday night with the Empire of the Royal Sovereign and Imperial Court of the Single Star.
Yes, I know. That's always hard to say in one breath.
I know.
And I guess, you know, over the years, especially some of us who are a little bit older, have been going through, you know, AIDS started, at least in our community that we know of, you know, publicly in the early 80s. And some of us, I guess, have sort of gotten worn down a little bit in dealing with this all the time. And we sort of forget about, you know, that things have gotten better, but it's still around.
Well, I think there's a certain apathy in the community these days, especially in the younger portion of the community, where they didn't see as much of the death and, you know, the destruction that HIV and AIDS can do. So the kind of the point of, that we're trying to highlight is that HIV is still out there. It is a virus. It could mutate at any time, and we could go through the same number of deaths that we had in the 80s and 90s. I'm kind of in the generation that I was aware of people dying, but I didn't see a lot of people dying. And I think people that are just now coming out or a little bit younger than me really don't know anyone that has died from HIV and AIDS. So I think it's important to highlight that, you know, World's AIDS Day is still here and there's no cure, so we're still here until there is a cure.
You know, I know I went to that first meeting there where Dalton DeHart basically twisted everybody's arm and says, hey, we need to really do this. And
he's pretty much the glue that kind of pulled us all together. He called me and, you know, anything that Dalton asked me to do, you know, of course I'm going to do because he's so important in the community. And he kind of pulled, he has all the connections in the community and pulled all these different organizations together and knows, you know, has the network to pull everyone and get everybody together in a single room.
Well, and I do want to just mention also that the Montrose Counseling Center is going to be doing a celebration of Dalton on December the 6th, yes, on a Thursday evening at their the new location, which is 401 Bernard.
Yes, I'll be there. It's actually a building fund also. It's kind of a fundraiser for their building. They're trying to enhance the building that they just moved into.
Okay. If somebody is interested in getting involved, I mean, is there still needs for volunteers or helping out with some of these events?
Yes, absolutely. You can email us on the website. There's a little link, contact link, and that will email me directly, and I can forward your information on to the appropriate committees and community organizations.
With all of this sort of working together, do you think we'll probably get some more press from the mainstream media?
Well, I don't know if that's our goal in this first year. We're just trying to get everybody together and kind of circle the wagon, so to speak. We did put together the website to kind of publicize that. In this first year, we just asked that people maybe wear a red ribbon, attend an event, just remember that World AIDS Day is still here for a reason, and maybe next year we'll get more community press. But we're here just to kind of publicize it within the community.
Great. Okay. So the website is?
www.worldaidsdayhouston.org.
Great. Brian, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Jack.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Are closing in. Been waiting all day for the night to begin. Lack of activity has taken its toll. The music's calling, gotta get up and go.
To get away, I need to go out. Just gotta get up and start moving around. No need to sit here and waste my time. No sense in staying, I'm going out tonight. That's what I'm looking for.
Sophomore's night, sitting in the dark. I wanna be there when the music starts. So baby, take me with you. You know the place I wanna go. I wanna go. I wanna go. Go where the music stops and the crowd is hot. I wanna be in the middle of you know the spot. I'm gonna make reality at the door. That's what I'm looking for. Sophomore's night, sitting in the dark.
In the dark.
This is J.D. Doyle, and that was Alan Lett being helped out by Josh Duffy on a song called The Spot from Alan's new CD, A Moment Away. They both performed last Friday night at Alan's CD release party at Salud Winery, a very nice event. And next Monday night, the second hour of Queer Voices, I got to plug the theme for that show because it ties in with tonight. It's called Songs About AIDS, and it's going to feature and explore different aspects of the AIDS crisis as it was dealt with musically.
This is Queer Voices.
And in the first hour of Queer Voices next week, we're going to be talking a little bit more about World AIDS Day because there's so many different things going on. But right now, speaking of the person who knows of a lot of things going on,
that's right,
is Tim Brookover, who is editor of Outsmart. And Tim does every week does this newsletter, email about all the events that happens at the community center. Right. And sometimes throws in some other things that's also happening.
Little tidbits.
Yes. So I guess you got the finger on the pulse, huh?
Well, sometimes.
As best as you can. I know.
Sometimes. But as you said earlier, there's so much going on that it's virtually impossible to keep up. And we find that true at the magazine as well. It's a nice problem to have. We have a very active and involved community, but it can be very difficult to keep up and also to get the word out so that everybody knows about it.
Well, and I bet you also get a lot of people who call you and say, oh, this is happening at the last minute.
Right. I got it actually at the magazine. It came to several of us, but an email today about it. Very interesting activity that's going on in the community. An author is going to be here, and it's a wonderful event. We would have loved to have covered it in the magazine. It's December 1st. So obviously we could do something after the fact.
Well, you can give it a plug now.
We could give it a plug now, except unfortunately I can't remember the details. because I think I just read that and just kind of shuffled it off to the side. Because we're working on our December issue right now and are in the throes of those final few days before deadline.
What is the deadline? If a community event's coming up and you know in advance, when should they get the information to you?
Generally, we like to ask people to get us information a month ahead of the publication day. So if you have something in January, you really need to get it to us by the 1st of December, if not already. We would, in fact, love to have it earlier, like 6 weeks out. We know that's not always possible, particularly with a lot of volunteer organizations that just don't have the people power to plan far ahead. But we really ask people to try to get us information a month ahead of the magazine's publication date. But anytime you have information, even if you think it's at the last minute and our deadline may have already passed, send it in, because you never know when we might need more information, or we might have, you know, a place in the magazine that needs to be filled up. So if you have information about an event or an activity or a person, send it to us.
Well, how do they get to you?
Well,
how would they send it to you?
The best way is just email me, tim@outsmartmagazine.com. Or if you prefer, you can call us. Some people still use the phone, 713-520-7237. All that information is also on our website, outsmartmagazine.com.
Good. What's coming up in the December issue?
Well, the December issue, we have some very interesting stuff. First of all, of course, it's the holidays. So we have some special gift coverage. This year we're focusing on gifts of music, which J.D., I think, should enjoy. And one of the things we did along with that is we asked some people in the community for their favorite holiday recording. What song really gets the holidays started for you? One of the people who responded to that is, of course, J.D., which I'm very pleased about. We also have a wonderful piece written by Ralph Lasher, the pastor over at Bethel UCC, about the ongoing controversy in the Episcopal Church regarding, the ordination of gay and lesbian clergy, but more broadly, the role of GLBT people in that denomination. Ralph was originally ordained as an Episcopal priest, although he left the Episcopal Church quite some time ago over their policies, but it's a very interesting essay written from his personal perspective. And we also, then we have an interview with Carney Wilson, who some people remember from Wilson
that.
Phillips, Hold On.
Carney Wilson's, gosh, long time.
90s or 80s. She has a new holiday CD out, or her first holiday CD out, and Nancy Ford, our senior editor, interviewed her. And it's really unexpectedly delightful.
Is Nancy Ford the senior editor like they have in the Comedy Central's The Daily Show? Every one of those comedians are the senior correspondent.
Yes, exactly. 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 So the piece with Carney is actually quite fun, and she's even in print, she's just wildly hilarious and very GLBT positive, which is, you know, which is great to read. So, yeah, we've got... then there's a wonderful piece, actually, that Rich Ehrenschild has written that I think a lot of people will find very interesting on the current issue in the community over something called concierge care, which is a new model that some private physician practices are following.
Basically, they want a retainer fee.
Exactly. And the doctor in our community... is Shannon Schrader, who has adopted this model for his practice. It's been somewhat controversial. It's a practice that started on the West Coast and is kind of working its way across the country. And Rich wrote a very interesting and balanced piece about the issue, which is really... The issue is really an indictment of our healthcare system more than any one doctor. Our healthcare system is very stratified, and this is just an example of the inequality in our healthcare delivery system.
Tell me a little bit more about the concierge. I'm sorry, I'm unaware of it.
Well, it's fairly new, and it's really only just come to Houston. It started in Seattle in the mid '90s. Basically, you, as Jack said, you pay a retainer fee. You pay a flat annual fee above and beyond any
insurance coverage,
insurance or out-of-pocket, to basically just have that person, that physician, as your doctor.
And that physician basically only takes so many patients a year that sign up for that.
And it can range, it generally ranges from $1,200 to $1,500 a year. So it's not a cheap date.
No, I guess not.
And I know some of his patients, and we have a couple of them are mentioned in the article, or Rich got quotes from them in the article. They decided to do that. I mean, they had the means to afford it, and of course, Dr. Schrader is a wonderful doctor, and so they said, sure, we'll do it. A number of his other patients don't have those kind of resources, and so they have to find another doctor.
Yep. When I first heard that, I thought immediately there's certain segments of the Oriental medicine where the doctor, medical doctor like we have, takes a fee to keep you well. And so, covers your medical care should you get sick. And so it behooves the doctor to actually help you stay well in lieu of you getting sick and then serving you then.
Interesting.
So, something we might bring on the show some later time. The community center. What's going on with the community center? I know that y'all are looking at a new location possibly.
Well, it's, yes, and we can now... talk freely about it.
Please do.
It's almost 100% sure that we will be moving at some point in early 2008 into the building that the Montrose Counseling Center is housed in, 401 Bernard, on the first floor, which is a floor that will also house some community organizations. Which is something the Counseling Center wanted to do from the beginning, to make some space available to the community. At this point, we are working with the Counseling Center on the lease, going back and forth about that. No deal breakers, nothing involving money, just some issues that, you know, we need to be spelled out, like signage and parking and, you know, tedious adult stuff like that. and so we're planning to move. The issue now is, you know, whenever it'll be ready. Because, of course, the Counseling Center has to do a lot of demolition on that floor, and then before they can even go in and do build-out.
There was a health club there before.
Fitness Exchange had been there for years. So we're looking at, we've heard March. So I would say March, April. Just depending, I guess, on how quickly things move. But we're very excited about it, and everybody who I talk to is just tremendously excited.
It's a great building, as I'm presently working there.
It's a great building.
Although the first floor has to be built out,
yes.
But the second, and it's a little bit deceiving because there is not a ground floor.
Right.
There's sort of an overhang there where cars are parked, but the first floor is going to be the floor where the community center and hatch and the switchboard mm-hmm. and some meeting space mm-hmm. is going to be, and a big meeting room.
A huge meeting room, which is wonderful. And yeah, the two floors that have already been built out in the Counseling Center, very first class. If you get a chance to go over there, you'll be very impressed. Did just a beautiful job. So it will definitely be a step up from where the community center is currently housed. We're happy to have been where we are at 3400 Montrose for a number of years, because it's something we could afford when we needed an affordable space. But it's time to move on.
Yep. But the community center is still busy at its current location.
Very busy. In fact, I just talked to another group today about meeting there every week. So people are in groups are, you know, continuing to book the center for their events, and we're always happy to have people talk to us and have their meetings or one-time events or workshops or parties or anything there.
Jack mentioned earlier that, you know, you put out a list of all the events, the community center as well as other events. If I were someone that isn't already on that email list, how could they get on it?
Well, you could, you're welcome to contact me, timbrookover@gmail.com. Or if you like, you could leave a message at the center, which is 713-524-3818. The update I send out every week really focuses primarily on events at the center or involving center tenants or center partners. But, of course, that encompasses a large number of groups in our community. But absolutely, if you'd like to be on that list, I try not to deluge people with emails during the week, but I do send out an update I try to do it on Saturday, but sometimes it slides into Sunday, just to help keep people up to date on what's going on.
Well, another way, of course, is to get on the Lone Star Activist
absolutely.
Listserv. Mm-hmm. And that's lonestaractivists@yahoogroups.com. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, that would actually be even better, because then you wouldn't only get, you'd get the postings.
You'd get more
out.
Stuff than you'd
ever
want.
You'd get more email.
Although lately it's
sort of calmed down.
It's calmed down a little bit. It's not, it tends to get a little riled up more right before an election. Perhaps we'll see a little bit before the runoffs, but it's really before a general election. People seem to get riled up, but not like,
well, the INDA issue in HRC was something that kept it going.
I think I blocked all that out. Yes. That was, of course, I contributed to a lot of those those back and forth emails and angry postings, and so I plead guilty.
But we won't hold it against you.
Thank you.
Especially the transgender community.
I know
we will not hold it against you. You were instrumental in getting some people's attention.
Well, it's, you know, it's just such an unbelievable issue. And I actually posted an email, I believe it was over the weekend, and Phyllis also posted it on her filibuster. There's a wonderful op-ed piece.
Yes.
I would encourage people to check out. It's in Gay City News, which is a New York City GLBT paper. And I can't remember the name of it, but if you go to their website, it'll be under the op-ed section. Really wonderful. One of the best kind of summations of the whole issue, and also has a very strong point of view. Has a point of view, obviously, not in favor of the ENDA that passed the House version without transgender protection. But it was good to read because it is a complicated issue, whatever side you're on, and it's hard to keep up with the ins and outs, and you know, seeing how laws get made is not always pleasant.
Well, and not to go off on that subject, but one of the things that most people don't understand, being transgender, is the fact that gender expression portion of ENDA, actually, it's, you know, gender identity covers the transgender, but the gender expression covers the masculine female,
right,
that whether they're GLBT or not. Right. As well as maybe the effeminate male.
Absolutely.
Who are slight male who maybe may not be GLBT, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm, that protects the, if you don't fit a certain stereotype based on your employer, they could fire you for it. And right,
absolutely,
now, they can't fire you for being, if it were to pass, gay or lesbian, but they could fire you because you didn't fit,
right,
a stereotype.
Which is, you know, pretty huge loophole as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the one the religious right drove through.
Right. Well, they've still got some power. They still, yeah, hold some sway, even with Jerry Falwell gone. And
well, they definitely do, but it's sort of nice to see them sort of fall apart over the Republican presidential candidates or have to make compromises.
Right.
You know, we can't forget that they basically went out to use us as a community to get elected, and just like it seems like it may be opportunistic for some people within our community to exclude the transgendered part of our community to be expedient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that expedience thing is, it gets you in the end. But yeah, it's important to remember the religious right is still out there, and if nothing else, and you know, Jack knows this better than anybody, all those groups have unbelievable mailing lists.
Oh,
and
yes.
Email lists. And those things are gold. You know, so they'll be ramping up, if they haven't already, as, you know, the election goes on. And, I mean, many of those organizations are already, you know, banging the, you know, Hillary is the devil drum.
But at the same, yes, that is, you know, we've got to watch out for that. We've got to be important. But at the same time, these local elections that are also happening are probably even more important.
Oh, I agree.
Because, you know, we sometimes get so distracted about, you know, wanting to write that email about this or that. But, you know, I mean, the fact of it is that this last election, the statewide turnout was about 10%. It was a little bit higher in the Montrose, maybe about 15, 16%, in the city. But that's pathetic that people aren't out there voting for things that matter so much. And, you know, not only do we have the runoff coming in second Saturday in December.
Mm-hmm.
December 8th. But also we have a primary coming up in March, early March. Mm-hmm. And this time it looks rather positive or a good chance that we might be able to upset the Republicans having a stronghold on the county and the state a bit. Maybe not take it over, but finally, you know, bring a two-party system back to that.
Yeah. Bring some balance to it, yes.
Yeah.
Well, and two, and I'm a big proponent of local, you know, all politics are local, which we've heard for a lifetime. If you want change, change will come quickly if it's in local politics.
Mm-hmm.
Because the elections are different, the access to the candidates, access to the elected officials is quicker, and issues get heard a lot sooner than they will be at a national level.
Right.
It's like having in Congress, it's like having a super tanker and trying to turn it around. Down, you know, in a local elections, it's more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
I won't even try to get a comparison of a boat. I'm not a boat person, but all politics are local. We can make actual differences for our community here locally in city elections, in state elections.
Well, one of the things I was so impressed about at the last caucus meeting, which of course I know Jack, you and Jennifer are both involved in.
I was there.
Was that the portion you were listening to?
That was the portion I was actually listening in. I wasn't talking. I was impressed by the number of politicians who were there who are involved either in just the 2008 general election or in the primary or both, who were there kind of hat in hand. And these aren't, I don't think any of them were GLBT.
There was a few there.
But
just a few.
Most of them weren't. And they were there looking for support and votes and the efforts of the caucus. And that was impressive. I mean, I lost count of how many there were, but it was a good number. It was more than 10.
Yes.
That's a testament to the influence of the caucus, because those folks are busy.
Well,
and
it's also,
they wouldn't be there if they didn't think there was a benefit to them.
Right. And it's also interesting that there there's going to be some competition in the primary,
mm-hmm,
on the Democratic side, whereas in the last cycle when we had this, you could even get a number of Democrats to run because they were so afraid,
right,
that they have to do business in front of these judges.
Yeah, especially all the judges, especially, they didn't want to run because they didn't believe there was a possibility of winning, so therefore they didn't want to have to face a judge that they just ran against.
Right.
So that's, again, going back to the power of the religious right and the changes of a balance within our political system, it's nice to see them out there, see
it
the
sure
candidates,
is.
See them filling up all the slots. And I know that from what I understand, the Democratic Party is trying to have someone running in every race.
That's great. You can't win if you don't play.
Exactly.
As the lottery folks would say.
So as you're putting together the December issue, it's getting down to the wire now, huh, with the holidays coming
up?
It
is, particularly because for some reason our printer doesn't want to work on Thanksgiving and on Thanksgiving weekend. I don't understand that. We're obviously not lashing them hard enough. But no, we have an extra early deadline this month and also next month because of Christmas.
Damn holidays.
So November and December are always short months for us. We definitely have to be wrapped up before Thanksgiving. But on the other hand, that makes the Thanksgiving holiday more pleasant for us because we don't have to run back to the office and finish the magazine. So, you know, you look at it half full rather than half empty. But it is always a kind of a mad sprint in November and December to get those magazines out before the holidays and meet the printer deadline, so they can go on vacation.
And if you've missed an issue or something, you can go online and pick it up?
You certainly can. Outsmartmagazine.com, and go to the bottom of the homepage, and there is a link. I think it's archived issues, and you can look at issues, I think, going back to 2001.
Goodness.
So, yes, you could spend a lot of time looking in magazines.
If you wanted to catch up.
Right. Exactly. Another internet time waster. Well, not waster.
Now, come on.
Spender.
Right. Well, Tim Brookover is editor of Outsmart Magazine, which is how old?
Actually, in February, the magazine will celebrate its 15th year.
Wow.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. It's amazing.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yes.
Particularly in this environment and this business, but we couldn't have done it without the community and the support of all of our readers and, of course, our advertisers. It's been just a wonderful relationship, and we're still here and plan on being here for a long time.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and outsmartmagazine.com, and you can pick up Outsmart at about 200 locations around the city.
It is free.
It's free, and in Galveston, and we're even getting out into some of the suburbs. And Beaumont.
Great. You're listening to Queer Voices.
It could be raining day with the sky dark as night. And all I can see is the beautiful light of your crystal blue eyes since you've come into my life. Each step I take's like a walk in the park. I've got this perpetual smile in my heart. Sometimes without saying a word. Deep in the silence, one touch, and I'm sure that my heart has been heard. Oh, it's like heaven on earth. Each simple kiss seems to be so profound. It's not just infatuation I've found.
This is JD, and yes, there are gay and lesbian country artists. That was Brian Glenn from his album Original Intent. The song is called My Whole World Is Falling in Love. This is Queer Voices, and next is This Way Out.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives and further reduce your U.S. tax liability. Better us than the government of George W. Bush, right? No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you. And happy holidays.
4 years ago this month, a landmark event started the worldwide Anglican Communion on a tempestuous path towards schism. It may seem unlikely that the historic conflict between the Episcopal Church USA and the 77 million member denominations' more conservative provinces of the Global South should begin in the tiny state of New Hampshire. But that's the way it was in November 2003 when This Way Out's Greg Gordon reported on the controversial proceedings.
Shouts of both hallelujah and heresy accompanied the historic November 2nd consecration of the Reverend Gene Robinson as the first openly gay bishop of the Episcopal Church USA. The leadership of the worldwide Anglican Communion, of which the Episcopalians are a part, has awaited the moment with bated breath.
Robinson's election last June by the Diocese of New Hampshire and his confirmation in August at the denomination's General Convention sent traditionalists into a tailspin. 2,700 U.S. delegates met in October to discuss splitting from the Episcopal Church, and primates from around the globe have threatened schism. Those threats led to an emergency two-day summit of the world's Anglican archbishops 3 weeks ago. They issued a statement announcing their agreement to establish a commission to study the Robinson crisis, as well as a Canadian diocese's decision to allow blessings for same-gender couples. Nevertheless, they warned that the gay priest's elevation to bishop would put the unity of the communion in serious jeopardy. But Robinson held his ground, and when the day arrived, 3,000 to 4,000 supporters, including some 50 bishops, gathered to witness his consecration at the University of New Hampshire's Whitmore Center in Durham. Outside, as police maintained a safety zone of about 30 feet between the more than 200 pro-gay demonstrators and their 25 anti-gay opponents, this church service had a disquieting gauntlet for parishioners to pass through. Inside, singing with her Exeter Church's 100-voice choir, was Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays National Board member Peggy Gage.
There was just mega amounts of security. There were police everywhere. And, but they were polite and very, very, you know, unobtrusive. They were very helpful and everything. But inside the building, you had to go through a metal detector and to get inside. And once you were inside with your ticket punched, you could not leave. So that what they were trying to do is to keep all those people inside safe from whatever was going on outside.
A lifelong active Episcopalian, Gage first met Robinson when they were both involved in a campaign for New Hampshire civil rights laws several years ago. The extraordinary security measures delayed the start of the service for almost an hour, but once things got started...
It was so typically New Hampshire because they had combined choir from the congregations in New Hampshire. Well, there were people from all over, and there were four choirs that sang. The procession was all the churches and the schools in the diocese. All of those people came in. And then we had the procession of the Episcopal, Ecumenical, and Interfaith guests that all came in. And it just went on and on, and you know, all these churches with their banners and everything. One of the girls, a young woman, had this beautiful, long, it was like a bendable stick, I can't even describe it, with a dove that was floating above it, and she would wave this. If we talk about peace in this world, the peace symbol was there. I mean, to see that floating in front of you, you know, with your procession of your crosses and your crucifers and your crucifer and your two young people carrying, the candles behind them. It was just absolutely breathtaking. And then, of course, in came the procession of the bishops. And there were 50 bishops from all over the country. As the bishops came in, and Gene... He was not then the bishop because he hadn't been consecrated, but his sacramental robes were just gorgeous, and they were made by, I think, a couple of guys in New York. And they were gorgeous. They were bright orange. Orange and reds, and in other words, it wasn't just some little white thing like that. You could definitely see who it was. And it was just really beautiful. There was this outpouring of a roar of approval when Gene came in and they actually saw him. It was spontaneous. It was the Holy Spirit working, honestly. It was just amazing because it was not put on. You know, it was like, there he is, he's here. It made it. In other words, he had so much hell from everybody, and there he is, this is his big day, and he's here.
Robinson was formally presented by his former wife, his daughters, his partner Mark Andrew, and other family members.
They had testimonies. And, of course, the testimonies were how he had been elected in New Hampshire. All the testimonies said that he should be confirmed. And then there is in the service, the signing of the declaration and witnesses. And one of the things that's said at the end of this prayer is, is just simply this: nevertheless, if any of you know any reason why we should not proceed, let it be known. And that's when the detractors can get up.
It breaks my heart to be here. My name is Earl Fox. I'm canonically resident in the Diocese of Pittsburgh.
He started to talk about the same old tired line of what's wrong with homosexuals and so forth and their lifestyle.
Approximately 91% engage in anal sex. 82% engage in rimming, the touching of the anus of one's partner with one's tongue.
Father Fox, I think you could spare us these details and come to the substance, please.
Well, you understand what I'm talking about.
Yes, I think we do.
This mom from PFLAG, when I hear that lifestyle term, it makes me jump because it just is so wrong. I mean, nobody in their right mind would want to be hated as much as my kid has been hated in her life. And it's not a lifestyle at all. Her lifestyle is to be a normal child with a cat and a nice partner that I love very much, and she lives and she pays taxes and she does all the that's her lifestyle. To call homosexuality a lifestyle just drives me nuts.
My name is Meredith Harwood. I'm from New Hampshire. To press forward with this consecration will be to turn our backs on Almighty God. This is the defiant and divisive act of a deaf church. The clear teaching of Holy Scripture in both testaments, without exception, is that sexual activity outside of marriage is wrong for the people of God, yet we are deaf to the Bible. The vast majority of Anglicans worldwide have told us not to take this step, which many of them see as a scandal, yet we are deaf to their cries. Again and again, a significant number of our ecumenical partners have asked us to step back from this plunge into unrighteousness, and their words have gone unheeded. Let us be quite clear. Not once, but twice this year, the Anglican primates have said that relationships between people who are not married are not to be sanctioned by the church. They recently warned us that this unilateral and arrogant American action, if carried through, would tear the fabric of our communion at its deepest level.
Then the African bishop from Albany said there were 36 bishops that didn't want, you know, that did not recognize Jane, and was talking about the Bible and their how they the Lambeth Agreement in 1998, and he just went on for quite some time, and they all thanked them very much. They were very, very polite to them, and Bishop Griswold just said, well, we've had this all discussed before, but we're just going to proceed. And so he went on.
Peggy Gage was especially impressed by outgoing New Hampshire Bishop Douglas Thuner.
Bishop Thuner, our retiring bishop, gave the most incredible sermon. He looked at him and he said, Gene, he said, I'm going to give you a couple of things that you must know when you take on this job, which is not going to be easy. He got a lot of laughs, too, from people. I mean, he has a very good sense of humor. But he said, holiness is a must. And you have been called by God. You haven't, you know, it isn't for you. You have been called by God. And what you've done is, because who you are, you have finally been able to reach out to the margins of our faith or of our church and bring those people in the margins to the center. Now, that is the message. When Gene spoke, before the communion, of course, he was vested, and he actually was consecrated.
Doug is right. It's not about me. It's about so many other people who find themselves at the margins and for whatever reason have not known the year of the Lord's favor. Your presence here is a welcome sign for those people to be brought into the center. So I want to say the same three things I said to you on the day that you called me to be your bishop. First is, you cannot imagine what an honor it is for you to have called me. Second of all, I want to remind you of what you already know, which is that there are people, faithful, wonderful Christian people, for whom this is a moment of great pain and confusion and anger. And our God will be served if we are hospitable and loving and caring toward them in every way we can possibly muster. And they must know that if they must leave, they will always be welcome back into our fellowship. And in the meantime, that we will do everything we possibly can to reach out to them in the kind of love that God modeled for us, that Jesus modeled for us, and that God wants for us.
The new Bishop of New Hampshire closed the service as well.
The bishop says, "Our help is in the name of the Lord." And people answer, "The maker of heaven and earth." The bishop says, "Blessed be the name of the Lord." And the people answer, "From this time forth forevermore." And then the bishop blesses you by making the sign of the cross. "The blessing, mercy, and grace of God Almighty, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit be upon you and remain with you forever." And everybody answers, "Amen." And then there's the dismissal. "Let us go forth into the world rejoicing in the power of the Spirit." And we all yell out, "Thanks be to God." And when they go out, this place erupted again as he went past everyone. You know, they just started to cheer. And, of course, right after his consecration, it was like, all I can think of is you know, if you want to have somebody that you like for president, they wouldn't stop cheering for him.
That was PFLAG mom and church choir member Peggy Gage describing the November 2nd consecration of Gene Robinson as New Hampshire's Episcopal Bishop. About 400 traditionalist Episcopalians held an alternative communion service at a borrowed church a couple of miles away, sponsored by the American Anglican Council, a network of conservatives. In a statement issued after Robinson's consecration, they declared that the time has come. Our family is now split and the whole cloth of the Anglican communion is torn. Realignment has begun. The Episcopal News Service's James Solheim told CNN,
"The presiding bishop has already met with bishops who are totally opposed to this consecration. He's also met with those who find great joy in this consecration. If we can't bridge that gap, we could be in trouble."
In Britain, the first among equals, Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, was not cheering either. "The divisions that are arising are a matter of deep regret," he said in a post-consecration statement, adding that they will be all too visible in the fact that it will not be possible for Gene Robinson's ministry as a bishop to be accepted in every province in the communion. Granting that Robinson's elevation was an act of good faith, Williams warned that the effects of this upon the ministry and witness of the overwhelming majority of Anglicans, particularly in the non-Western world, have to be confronted with honesty. The leader of the Global Anglican Communion still, however, expressed some optimism that the agreement to continue discussions on the subject of homosexuality reached at last month's emergency primates meeting would forestall any hasty action by the conservatives. Peggy Gage says she's keeping the faith.
"I have a feeling that this church will not be divided forever. When Gene visited us a week ago before his consecration, he feels very strongly that there's going to be trouble for a while, but I just think that the more that we work at it and do what he's asked, which is to do God's work out there, that they'll realize that it's wrong to fuss over this."
Reporting for This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
There's been hell to pay in the Anglican Communion since the consecration of Bishop Robinson. Recent developments include the Conservative Diocese of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's overwhelming vote to leave the Episcopal Church, while the Diocese of California voted just as overwhelmingly to allow blessings for same-gender couples. Cracks are showing among Canadian Anglicans as well, with the Diocese of Montreal joining California in supporting queer partners, while a priest in the Diocese of Ontario has been disciplined for performing a same-gender wedding. Robinson remains the sole out Episcopal bishop in the U.S. now that a lesbian candidate has lost her bid to lead the Diocese of Chicago to an LGBT-friendly, albeit more moderate, nominee. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Sherry Lunn, and Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly contributed program material. Special thanks to Peggy Gage and to Raquel Maria Dillon and John Greenberg of New Hampshire Public Radio. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out anytime exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are supported by charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening on 2NUR Newcastle, New South Wales, WWUH West Hartford, Connecticut, KRCL Salt Lake City, Utah, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Well, we want to thank everybody tonight.
It was an interesting show. Who do we have?
We had...
Well, actually, it started out with... We had our own people.
Yes, we did. We talked to
our QV host and hostesses.
That's right. The Transgender Day of Remembrance. That was on Saturday, and I was interviewed by J.D. Doyle.
Well, we just, you know, contributed a little bit.
Yeah. I want to thank Brian LaVecca with the AIDS Day, Brad Odom with Pride. Tim Brookover was here with the GLBT Community Center and Outreach Magazine. Wanda Adams.
Outsmart Magazine.
What did I say?
Outreach.
Outreach. Sorry about that, guys. Outsmart Magazine. And Wanda Adams, who is candidate for District D in the runoff December 8th. And Nick Helliard, who is managing the Montrose Get Out the Vote. Go ahead.
I want to plug again QMH, Queer Music Heritage, right, next week. Songs about AIDS, and I really enjoyed researching this show because I realized I had lots of things to cover. The social, the political angles of it, the mourning, the anger, the grief. Lots of different angles to the music of AIDS.
We want to thank everybody and come back and join us next week. This is Queer Voices. This is Jennifer Renee.
And J.D. Doyle.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Edwards, reminding you that KPFT is community radio, powered by the people. KPFT is radio for peace, radio for justice. KPFT is one of few radio stations where listener members vote for their board of directors. KPFT is committed to serving the underserved. KPFT needs your help by becoming a listener member and supporting the KPFT elections. So join us. Join KPFT 90.1 Radio and send in your ballots by November 15th. Ada Edwards reminding you that KPFT is our radio station.
Hi, this is Rick Mitchell, longtime KPFT supporter and volunteer. I would like to remind my fellow KPFT members to vote in our local station board election. The deadline for receiving mailed ballots has been extended to November 30th, or you can drop off your ballot on December 1st at the KPFT studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. Pacifica is a unique experiment in democratic community radio, but like all democracies, it requires the active participation of the community to be effective. Please take a few minutes to review the candidate statements and cast your vote as soon as possible to support KPFT, Radio for Peace.
I'm gonna be a wheel someday. I'm gonna be somebody. I'm gonna be a real gold cat. Then I won't want you.
This is Sissy Farenthold, and I'm calling all Pacific.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.